the Red Planet, the place where little green men come from to take over the Earth, the place that we have to colonize before we destroy the Earth, the place that humans have gazed upon and romanticized for centuries, Mars, the fourth rock from the sun. There have probably been more TV shows and movies about this place than any other, besides maybe the moon and Earth, of course. But I want to know why. And most importantly, I want to know when. Trust me, it'll make sense.
Podcast presented by Sonic Embassy.
Episode 05, Milky Way Marvels, Mars.
Greetings, Earthling. Milky Way Marvels is a continuing series where we explore the wonders of our galaxy. So, what's your favorite planet?
So, when someone asks me what my favorite planet is, I don't have one, but the first thing that comes to my mind is Jupiter from All That. So, I'm gonna have to go with Jupiter.
So, if I'm allowed to pick Pluto, I'm gonna say Pluto is my favorite planet. Because it's the underdog planet. It's out there barely hanging on to the solar system. They're kicking it out of the planet club, and I'm rooting for it to get back in. It's a little tiny and adorable. If I'm not allowed to pick Pluto, I'm gonna say Jupiter is my favorite planet because it's a big gas giant, which is something we have in common. It's orange, which is my favorite color, and it's just all around a super awesome planet for non-scientific reasons, so I'm gonna say Jupiter is my favorite planet.
Hey, I can relate to that too, fam. That's really funny. My wife refers to me as a gas giant as well. More Jupiter fans, you know, great minds think alike. So one of the solar system's more popular planets is Mars. From scientists to astronomers to regular people like me, Mars is captivating. Mars has been a fascination of humans since early human history. I wonder why that is. Well, I've been thinking about that. You know, there was a lot less light pollution back then. Today, if you live near a city, there's so much ground light it obscures our view of the lights in the night sky. But for humans before the advent of electricity, they got to see all kinds of interesting and strange lights in the night sky. The only thing they could binge watch back then was each other and the night sky. One of those things was this light that looked different from the other dots of light. This one was red, fiery red, blood red. Hardeacher. That's what the ancient Egyptians called it, the red one. Ancient Greeks called it Ares, their god of war. Nergal, that's what the ancient Babylonians called it after their deity that was originally associated with fire and the heat of the sun, and that later came to be regarded as a god of war and hunting, and called the raging king, the violent one, and the one who burns. The Chaldeans, in the area of Babylonia, were noted for their knowledge of mathematics and astronomy, and the planets that were known at that time were thought to have special powers over people's lives. So they were named for the five leading gods and goddesses. The Romans had adopted the Babylonian terms and simply translated them into their equivalents in Rome. And so today we still refer to these planets by their Roman names. For instance, the planet of Ishtar, the goddess of love, became, yep, Venus. The god Marduk was changed to Jupiter. Ninurta became Saturn, and Nergal became Mars. The Babylonians even named the days of the week after their seven known celestial bodies, which in Spanish makes it make so much more sense now. Moonday or Monday or Lunes. Mars Day, or Martes, is Tuesday. Get it? Martes? Martes? And other languages for Tuesday have that M-A-R in it as well. Even the English word Tuesday comes from the Anglo-Saxon deity of war, Tues, spelled differently though, T-E-W-S. They even did the month of March or Marzo in Spanish. Even the name Marcos. Crazy, huh? Ah, the ancients. Okay, so Mars was first discovered. Well, that's the interesting thing. Because it's so close to Earth, humans have noticed Mars since early human history. So it's kind of hard, if not impossible, to say who the first to discover it was. There are records from, of course, the ancient Greeks, Romans, Babylonians. Egyptians depicted Mars in some tombs and writings. And records were found in ancient China, possibly from the Shang Dynasty or the Zhou Dynasty around 1045 or sooner. So who first discovered Mars? I don't know, Adam and Eve? I mean, it'd be kind of hard to get a patent on being the first to discover it. But the first recorded telescopic view of Mars was made in the year 1610 by Italian astronomer, physicist, and philosopher Galileo Galilei. And since then, the discoveries and fascination and imagination have been steadily increasing. Why are humans so fascinated with this particular planet? The answer may lie in how long you've been on this planet. For instance, if you're older, you may remember a time when not a whole lot was known about Mars and when everyone thought Mars had life. Martians that might want to abduct humans or take over our Earth. If you're younger, then all you know is a time when Earthlings already have robots on Mars, and maybe it's cool, but yeah, you know, you're kind of used to it. So when did this fascination begin? When did the obsession with aliens from Mars start? Well, as I mentioned, ancient civilizations had their own thoughts about the red dot in the sky, the fire star. Sometimes this blood-red dot seemed to go backwards in the sky. It was weird. Strange. Creepy. Of course, we now know that that happens in part because Earth orbits the Sun a lot faster than Mars does. So eventually Earth overtakes Mars like a race car on the inside turn. An Earth year around the Sun, we know, is 365 days. But for Mars, it's 687 days. So you put the streamingly strange occurrences along with this scary red color, plus humans' inborn imagination and creativity, and you've got the perfect ingredients for obsession with Mars. In the year 1659, Dutch astronomer Christiaan Huygens makes note of a large dark spot on Mars. Years later, he publishes a book entitled Cosmotheros, in which he talks of intelligent extraterrestrial life on other planets. In this translated excerpt, Huygens references that dark spot. He wrote, "But Mars, as I said before, has some parts of him darker than others. His nights and days have been found to be about the same length with ours. But the inhabitants have no perceivable difference between summer and winter, as has been discovered by the motion of his spots. Our Earth must appear to them almost as Venus doth to us. His light and heat is twice, and sometimes three times less than ours, to which I suppose the constitution of his inhabitants is answerable." At a point in the year 1719, Mars was in opposition. Opposition is the time when a planet is in the exact opposite position in the sky to the Sun. So just think, the Sun is behind us and the planet is directly in front of us, all lined up. It's during these times that the planet, whether it's Mars, Jupiter, etc., that planet will appear at its largest and brightest in the sky. Now, oppositions happen all the time, and because of the way some orbit, they get closer to Earth than at other times. Today, when these occur, Astronomers love it. And chances are, when you hear about an upcoming one on the news with one of the planets, you probably try to check it out for yourself, if you remember. It's a really cool phenomenon. Today, we have the benefit of knowledge from all of the pathfinders and technology to know why these things occur and when they will occur again. So try to imagine how people in the past, without that benefit, but with their imaginations and superstitions, viewed these events. In his 2005 book, Mars, A Tour of the Human Imagination, author Eric S. Rabkin wrote concerning that time, "In 1719, opposition brought Mars closer to Earth than it had been in about 300 years, and closer than it would be again until August 2003. The public experienced hot panic. Mars appeared so large and so red in the black night sky that it was taken by some to be a threatening comet, and by others to be an ominous, inverted replay of the Star of Bethlehem." As we move later into the 1700s, German-British musician and self-taught astronomer Sir William Herschel, who also happened to discover Uranus, okay, that's the obligatory Uranus joke. I know it's pronounced Uranus, okay. I had to get that out of the way. Sir William Herschel, through his own telescopes, studies the night sky. Night after night, Herschel and his sister study the night sky inch by inch, and especially Mars. He deduces that the white areas of Mars are made of ice, polar ice caps that partially melted in the spring and summer. He concludes that the dark areas were oceans, and the lighter red areas were land. He became convinced that Mars had an atmosphere and was so much like Earth that it most likely had an Earth-like environment. In an address to the Royal Society, he said in part, "Mars has a considerable but modest atmosphere, so that its inhabitants probably enjoy a situation in many respects similar to our own." In later publications, however, he repeatedly made reference to the idea that living beings resided on the sun and every other planet. He was like, why else would God hang the sky with these celestial bodies without populating them? The belief in Martians doesn't stop there. Oh no, it grows. As we progress into the 1800s, telescope technology progresses as well. And here is where things really get interesting. In 1877, Italian astronomer Giovanni Schiaparelli observed Mars in Milan with good weather and during several occasions that he described as moments of absolute atmospheric calm, as if a dense veil were removed from the surface of the planet. He saw new streaks and lines and spots and markings. He referred to these features in Italian as canali, which can translate in English as channel, something naturally formed. But it was instead translated to canals, which are artificial waterways constructed for irrigation or water vehicles. Now, historians say this translation, blunder, was spurred because of the excitement over the new Suez Canal, which had just completed and opened in 1869. A Panama Canal was in the works too. So with this one word, the implication is that someone had to have built all those canals on Mars, so it would have to have intelligent life. Uh-oh, intelligent life, Mars, war, red, blood, invasion? In 1894, electrical engineer and inventor and pioneer of wireless technology, Sir William Henry Preece proposed that it might be possible to communicate with Mars. In his address at the Society of Arts, he said, "One cannot help speculating as to what may occur through planetary space. Strange, mysterious sounds are heard on all long telephone lines when the Earth is used as a return, especially in the calm stillness of night. If any of the planets be populated with beings like ourselves, having the gift of language and the knowledge to adapt the great forces of nature to their wants, then if they could oscillate immense stores of electrical energy to and fro in telegraphic order, it would be possible for us to hold commune by telephone with the people of Mars. In the 1890s, American astronomer and businessman Percival Lowell built his own observatory in Arizona, initially for the further study of Mars. And he went all in on the theory that these streaks were in fact canals, and that Mars was dying, and that the Martians in desperation had constructed a planet-wide irrigation system using melted polar ice cap water, Mars' last water source. He spent 15 years studying Mars, and after a Mars opposition in 1907, was sure that that system of canals had grown. He wrote 3 books about it, and newspapers and magazines wrote articles about it, further fueling the public's imagination. In 1897, inspired by Lowell, author H.G. Wells wrote the science fiction novel The War of the Worlds. It's about an invasion of England by aliens from Mars. During the astronomical opposition of 1894, when Mars is closer to Earth than usual, several observatories spot flashes of light or explosions on the surface of Mars over several nights. Months later, what is initially thought to be a meteor crashes near the narrator's home in a place called Horsell Common in England. Soon, Martians emerge, described as the strange horror of its appearance, with a peculiar V-shaped mouth, groups of tentacles, immense eyes, intense, inhuman, crippled, and monstrous, with oily brown skin. It was unspeakably nasty, disgusting, and dreadful. Later, the Martians begin attacking humans with their powerful heat ray. Here's a portion I found interesting in Book 1, Chapter 1, The Eve of the War. H.G. Wells wrote, "And we men, the creatures who inhabit this earth, must be to them as alien and lowly as are the monkeys and lemurs to us. The intellectual side of man already admits that life is an incessant struggle for existence, and it would seem that this too is the belief of the minds upon Mars. Their world is far gone in its cooling, and this world is still crowded with life, but crowded only with what they regard as inferior animals. To carry warfare sunward is, indeed, their only escape from the destruction that, generation after generation, creeps upon them. And before we judge them too harshly, we must remember what ruthless and utter destruction our own species has wrought, not only upon animals, such as the vanished bison and the dodo, but upon its inferior races. The Tasmanians, in spite of their human likeness, were entirely swept out of existence in a war of extermination waged by European immigrants in the space of 50 years. Are we such apostles of mercy as to complain if the Martians warred in the same spirit? The Martians. Mathematical learning is evidently far in excess of ours. Had our instruments permitted it, we might have seen the gathering trouble far back in the 19th century. Men like Schiaparelli watch the red planet. It is odd, by the by, that for countless centuries Mars has been the star of war, but failed to interpret the fluctuating appearances of the markings they mapped so well. All that time, the Martians must have been getting ready." As we move into the 1900s, technological process is happening faster than ever before. Serbian-American scientist and inventor Nikola Tesla, in 1901, claimed he was receiving radio communications from Mars. His story was widely reported in the press. In 1922, Tesla said,
22 years ago, while experimenting in Colorado with a wireless power plant, I obtained extraordinary experimental evidence of the existence of life on Mars. I had perfected a wireless receiver of extraordinary sensitiveness, far beyond anything known. And I caught signals, which I interpreted as meaning 1, 2, 3, 4. I believe the Martians use numbers for communication, because numbers are universal.
He spent 50 years of his life trying to find a way to communicate with Mars. Tesla believed that Mars was inhabited with intelligent Martians and had a civilization, as evidenced by the canals of the red planet, Mars, which could be seen by telescope. As communication technology took off, so did stories of communicating with Mars. In 1920, Italian physicist, inventor, and Nobel Prize winner Guglielmo Marconi, who is also credited with the groundbreaking work necessary for all future radio technology, reports that he has been hearing strange sounds in his transmissions, some almost musical, and similar to Morse code. Others agree. In 1924, during another Mars opposition, the Secretary of the Navy, Charles D. Wilbur, requests that stations go silent so Mars transmissions can be heard. The following is from an actual telegram from the Navy received in Seattle, Washington on August 22, 1924.
Puget Sound, Washington, August 22, 1924. 7021, Al Nav Station 8. Navy desires cooperate astronomers who believe possible that Mars may attempt communication by radio waves with this planet while they are near together this end. All shore radio stations will especially note and report any electrical phenomenon, unusual character, and will cover as wide band frequencies as possible from 2400 August 21 to 2400 August 24th. Without interfering with traffic. 1800, Sec Navy, Wash, D.C.
The public was interested, but the Mars opposition of 1924 came and went, and all that was heard was... Also in 1924 saw the release of the big-budget Soviet silent film Alita, Queen of Mars, based on the novel. A mysterious wireless message is received by various stations. Someone suggests it has come from Mars. Sound familiar? Remember earlier we mentioned the H.G. Wells sci-fi book, The War of the Worlds? Well, it's back. In 1938, the now legendary Orson Welles presented an updated realistic radio dramatization of that Martian invasion of Earth on CBS Radio that many people reportedly thought was real. On the cool fall Sunday evening of October 30th, at 8 p.m. to be exact, millions of Americans tuned in to their favorite programs on the radio. Now, if you were listening to CBS, you would have heard Orson Welles introduce the program.
Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
You'd settle in to enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Mercury Theater and star of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water.
After Orson Welles' intro, which was an excerpt from the book, the show began like a regular radio program.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From the Meridian Room in the Park Plaza Hotel in New York City, we bring you the music of Raymond Raquello and his orchestra. With a touch of the Spanish, Raymond Raquello leads off with La Campanita.
Was then into interrupted with a breaking news bulletin.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson of the observatory at Princeton confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomenon as, quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote. We now return you to the music of Ramon Raquello, playing for you in the Meridian Room of the Park Plaza Hotel, situated in downtown New York. And now a tune that never loses favor, the ever-popular Stardust, Raymond Raquello and his orchestra.
And another.
Ladies and gentlemen, following on the news given in our bulletin a moment ago, the Government Meteorological Bureau has requested the large observatories of the country to keep an astronomical watch on any further disturbances occurring on the planet Mars. We are ready now to take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, where Carl Phillips, our commentator, will interview Professor Richard Pearson, famous astronomer. We take you now to Princeton, New Jersey.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carl Phillips speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton. I'm standing in a large semicircular room, pitch black except for an oblong split in the ceiling. Through this opening, I can see a sprinkling of stars that cast a kind of frosty glow over the intricate mechanism of the huge telescope. The ticking sound you hear is the vibration of the clockwork. Professor Pearson stands directly above me on a small platform, peering through the giant lens. I'll ask you to be patient, ladies and gentlemen, during any delay that may arise during our interview. Besides the ceaseless watch of the heavens, Professor Pearson may be interrupted by telephone or other communications. During this period, he is in constant touch with the astronomical centers of the world. Professor, may I begin our questions?
At any time, Mr. Phillips.
Professor, would you please tell our radio audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A red disk swimming in a blue sea. Transverse stripes across the disk. Quite distinct now, because Mars happens to be at the point nearest the Earth, in opposition, as we call it.
In your opinion, what do these transverse stripes signify, Professor Pearson?
Not canals, I can assure you, Mr. Phillips.
Safe.
Although that's the popular conjecture of those who imagine Mars to be inhabited. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of atmospheric conditions peculiar to the planet.
Then you're quite convinced, as a scientist, that living intelligence as we know it does not exist on Mars?
Say the chances against it are 1,000 to 1.
And yet, how do you account for these gas eruptions occurring on the surface of the planet at regular intervals?
Phillips, I cannot account for it.
Just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Someone has just handed Professor Pearson a message. Professor, may I read the message to the listening audience?
Certainly, Mr. Phillips.
Ladies and gentlemen, I shall read you a wire addressed to Professor Pearson from Dr. Gray of the Natural History Museum, New York. Quote, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Seismograph registered shock of almost earthquake intensity occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Princeton. Please investigate. Signed, Lloyd Gray, Chief of Astronomical Division. Unquote. Professor Pearson, could this occurrence possibly have something to do with the disturbances observed on the planet Mars?
Hardly, Mr. Phillips. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, we shall conduct a search as soon as daylight permits.
Thank you, Professor. Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 10 minutes, we've been speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton, bringing you a special interview with Professor Pearson, noted astronomer. This is Carl Phillips speaking. We are returning you now to our New York studio.
And more breaking news.
We take you now to Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Carl Phillips again, out at the Wilmot Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Now, history says that at 8 p.m. on Sunday night, most Americans were, in fact, not listening to CBS, but the hot show of the day on NBC. So most did not flip the channel to CBS until after 8, around 8:12 or so. And if you flipped then, you would have missed Orson Welles' introduction. You may have tuned in just in time to hear something like this.
Kind of like a 4th of July rocket.
Yes, then what?
I turned my head out the window and would have sworn I was asleep and dreaming.
Yes?
I seen a kind of greenish streak and then zingo. Something smacked the ground, knocked me clear out of my chair.
Well, Were you frightened, Mr. Wilmot?
Well, I ain't quite sure. I reckon I was kind of riled.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wilmot. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you want me to tell
you? No, that's quite all right. That's plenty. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Mr. Wilmot, owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. I wish I could convey the atmosphere, the background of this fantastic scene. Hundreds of cars are parked in a field in back of us, and the police are trying to rope off the roadway leading into the farm.
Can you imagine? You flip over, you think you're going to hear one thing, and then you're like, wait a minute, is this the news? What's going on? And then...
Lord, they're turning into flames. The whole field's caught up by the woods, the barns, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. It's coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, we have...
Now, legend has it that millions of Americans did not realize it was a fictional program already in progress, or apparently recognized the storyline from the H.G. Wells novel, and freaked out and fled the New Jersey area.
The next voice you hear will be that of Professor Pearson.
The acting was realistic.
I'm speaking from the roof of Broadcasting Building. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end. The enemy is now in sight above the Palisades. Five great machines.
The sound effects and production was excellent.
We're diving on the first one. Now the engine's gone. Eight.
And as you might want your favorite shows to be today, it was realistic. You know, here at Sonic Embassy, I gotta respect that audio artistry. And I believe they did all that stuff live, too. It's amazing. But there is another storyline that says that people, in fact, did not freak out and that it was all the newspapers hyping that up to discredit radio news because radio had started to kick newspapers' butts, and as time went on, the legend of panic in the streets grew. Reportedly, the film Flash Gordon, Mars Attacks the World, was quickly released to capitalize on the hype. When a deadly nitron ray strikes Earth, Flash Gordon and his friends travel to Mars to battle Ming the Merciless and his new ally, Queen Azura. Since then, our imagination with the Red Planet and aliens continued with countless movies about it. Early space programs also obsessed over getting to Mars, with the US and USSR leading the charge. But in 1965, the US's Mariner spacecraft returned the first ever pictures of the Martian surface and the first images of another planet ever returned from deep space. So, yes, we were finally going to get to see some evidence of aliens on Mars. No. Mariner played spoiler. Mariner 4 effectively ruined our imaginations about Mars. Or did it? In a moment, Mars and modern pop culture. And what's the future look like for further Mars exploration? So, after Mariner 4's images revealed no alien ruins or canals, we humans kind of just gave up our fascination with the Red Planet, right? No. First of all, Mars is all throughout pop culture.
Special delivery from Mars.
Oh, goody, another uranium Peel-36 explosive space modulator. Isn't that wonderful? Now we can blow up the Earth.
But first, as more images were taken and crushed our hopes and dreams of ancient civilizations on Mars, humans still held on to the hope. So in 1976, when NASA's Viking 1 sent back an aerial image in an area called Cydonia of a rock formation that kind of resembled a human face, that was the spark that launched a new wave of alien theories. Of course, scientists believed it was just a coincidence, But to many, that just meant that the government was hiding the truth. It was an alien artifact. It was an alien structure. It's an alien monument. It's a message to Earth. It's something, anything. This was even featured in the 2000 film Mission to Mars.
Look, what are you trying to tell us? You're trying to tell us
that's the face. It's the face. It's real. Somebody put that thing there. It's not us.
Jim. It's not possible. Look at that.
My God. As I said, Mars is all throughout pop culture. And in perhaps one of the most popular space-based series of our time, what are you thinking? The Star Trek universe.
Do you wish that the first Apollo mission hadn't reached the moon, or that we hadn't gone on to Mars and then to the nearest star?
Voyager wasn't a warship. We were explorers.
Yes, I know. Trying to get home to Mars.
Earth! You see, you couldn't even get that right.
For example, Mars was the location of a major shipyard called Utopia Planitia Fleet Yards, where some famous starships were built, like Defiant, Enterprise D, and Voyager.
It was called the Great Experiment. Could humans colonize deep space? They'd already built New Berlin on the moon, Utopia Planitia on Mars, even a few asteroid colonies, but all within our solar system.
Fun fact, Utopia Planitia is the real-life location where Viking 2 landed in 1976. See, that's why I love Star Trek. And in the series Picard, an attack against Mars sets up part of the plot for the series.
Strange. I didn't know we were on course to Mars. This isn't right.
Many of you may remember the classic Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from 1990, Total Recall.
Now, help me out here, Doug. You were interested in a memory of,
Mars.
Yeah, Mars.
Did a problem?
To be perfectly honest with you, Doug, if outer space is your thing, I think you would be much happier with one of our Saturn cruises. Everybody raves about them.
No, I'm not interested in Saturn. I said Mars.
Okay. You're the boss. Mars it is. Now, let me see. Basic Mars package will run you 899 credits. Now that's for 2 full weeks of memories, complete in every detail.
Getting stranded on Mars is also a popular storyline. Like the aforementioned 2000 film Mission to Mars, and the film of the same year, The Red Planet.
The Mars Terraforming Project will be the greatest achievement in the history of human exploration. We have to make Mars the future, or mankind is history.
Ready?
Big day.
No room for mistakes either.
Gentlemen, we're eating dinner on Mars.
And more recently, the 2015 film The Martian, starring Matt Damon.
Everywhere I go, I'm the first. It's a strange feeling. Step outside the rover, first guy to be there. Climb that hill, first guy to do that. 4.5 billion years, nobody here. And now, me. I'm the first person to be alone on an entire planet.
You know, just once, I would like to see them depict a mission to Mars or somewhere where it goes smoothly. It's always a catastrophe. Even at this moment, there are several series that feature a future Mars. For instance, the series The Expanse, set hundreds of years in the future, where Mars is an independent military power.
The Secretary General has to make a strong response.
Like what?
Like redeploy the fleet.
Which will only inflame the situation. We don't even know that the Martians are behind this.
We have the word of some ice hauler named James Holden.
He was a naval officer.
You saw his service record.
With those resources, Mars could finally cut the cord to Earth.
If you want a war with Mars, this will get you one. But it's my soldiers that will end up dying for
it. Well, Secretary General wants a plan of action, Admiral.
There's a miniseries literally named Mars, about the first colony mission in 2033.
That was when Mars became real for all of us. A
for those of us who were around to see the first days, it was electrifying. The world's leading space agencies united as the International Mars Science Foundation and joined with private industry to accomplish one shared goal: to build a home for humankind on Mars. People weren't just talking about the Red Planet. They were making plans to go there. And after years of training in the astronaut corps, I was chosen to command the first human mission to Mars.
There's also the Netflix series called Away, about an international crew on a 3-year mission to Mars.
Of course we should care about social imperatives. But in the US alone, we spend $1 trillion each year on the military. And mostly in case the countries represented here decide to blow each other off the face of the Earth. This mission, it costs a fraction of that. As we work together, repurposing those same tools of destruction for discovery.
This very moment, there's a team of astronauts on the moon mining polar ice caps for fuel and water.
Water that will be pumped into the hull of our ship to shield us from radiation, allowing us to travel safely from the moon to Mars.
Reaching Mars might prove to be the greatest achievement, not only for science, but for the future of our planet.
And not to mention one hell of a ride.
So, past and present, there is a plethora of content featuring the Red Planet. Way too many to list here. And no doubt, this trend will continue into the future. Speaking of the future, what's going on in real life? Are there any more missions planned? Yes, like a lot. And not just from NASA. As of this moment, the HOPE spacecraft is on its way from the United Arab Emirates, the first Mars probe launched by any Arab or Muslim country. NASA's Perseverance rover is also en route to Mars. The China National Space Administration Tianwen-1 orbiter and rover is also en route. Launching soon is the Rosalind Franklin rover, a joint mission from ESA and the Russian Roscosmos State Corp. The Indian Space Research Organization has planned MOM-2, or the Mars Orbiter Mission 2, better known as Mangalyaan 2. Yep, Mangalyaan 2. Mangalyaan 1 has already been orbiting Mars for several years now, making India the first Asian country to do it. Japan's got Terex-1 and Terex-2 launching soon, as well as MMX, the Martian Moon Exploration Probes that will explore Mars's two moons. And fortunately, it's not just governments that are planning missions. Private companies are too, like SpaceX. Founder and CEO Elon Musk says they are on track to launch for Mars soon. The next voice you hear will be Elon Musk at the 2020 Mars Society Virtual Convention.
It's only a couple years after that because the Mars transit window is every 26 months. I think we maybe have a shot of sending, or trying to send something to Mars in 3 years, but the window is 4 years away because of the being in different parts of the solar system. I think it's helpful to have as the objective the creation of a self-sustaining city on Mars. I think this is not simply a few people or a base, but a self-sustaining city. The acid test really is, if the ships from Earth stop coming for any reason, does Mars die out? For any reason. If the ships stop coming for any reason, does the city on Mars die out? If it does, we're not in a secure place. I mean, I think this really might come down to, on the great filter front, are we going to create a self-sustaining city on Mars before or after World War III? And I think the probability of it being created after World War III, hopefully there's never a World War III, but of after is low. So we should try to create, make the city self-sustaining.
This is really exciting. And I didn't even talk about all the satellites and robots already studying the Red Planet right now. I tell you what, it is a great time to be a Mars fan. And it's always a good time to become one. With all the current and future missions, wow, think we'll be doing another Mars episode really soon. Just like our early ancestors, I think the obsession is still there, just looks a little different. So, what do you think? Is the planet Mars awesome? Is it becoming one of your faves? I'd love to know. My email is studio@sonicembassy.com. And you can also find the Sonic Embassy on Twitter, Facebook, and IG. Our website, sonicembassy.com. I hope listening to this has inspired you to take an extra moment to look up into the night sky and appreciate. If you want to learn more about Mars, the Milky Way marvel, here are some great resources besides your favorite search engine. nineplanets.org/Mars, mars.nasa.gov, space.com, jw.org, and astrodigital.org, just to name a few. Hey, if you enjoy this episode, tell everyone you know. And if you didn't like it, tell everyone you know anyway, please. That would really get me. If you have an idea that you think would make a great episode, please by all means let me know. Thank you so much for listening. I love you, and I hope you'll listen more soon. I can't wait to explore more Milky Way marvels really soon.
Embassy.
Sonic Embassy.